read the hint.
Yeah, she read the hint. Anybody else want a hint with me? It's time to ring our bells.
Yeah, man.
You can feel free to do that later. Ladies and gentlemen, last year, it's been going on for a few years now, but last year we decided we were going to get serious and join the rest of the country, or most of the country, and get busy doing a bell program. And we had a rather successful bell program. I was really pleased with the outcome and all the stories I heard. Unfortunately, I never got up there in person. The scheduling was just such that I could never get up to actually be in person at the program, but several people in this audience were at the program for a day or two. I know, Dan, you spent quite a bit of time helping out in all the extra ways that the teachers needed you, and I think they'd like to give you a thanks, but Kate can do that later as a shout out. And there were plenty of other people who came and visited and participated in the program. But for the sake of this discussion, I'm gonna call her lead teacher. I don't know whether the term fits or not, but in my mind, she's the lead teacher in our affiliate. For her reflections on the Bell program, for her hopes for the future, for whatever she cares to say about the Bell program, I give you our lead teacher, Kate Mendez.
Yay! What's my time frame? Half hour. Okay, still the same. All right. Well, I was just saying to Mindy up here that when I expressed disappointment at National for not being able to see Mr. Shriver speak, I had another appointment that night. I didn't anticipate having to follow his act at state. So we'll see how this goes. So as Carl indicated, this past summer was our first Bell program in New York State, but the program has been growing steadily over the last 6 or 8 years. It's a national initiative of the NFB and coordinated out of Baltimore by Natalie Shahane, who I think has a bottomless well of patience, time, and energy. Because I can tell you that she spent an awful lot of time on conference calls with us. And if you multiply that by 30-something other states, I can only imagine. I don't think she sleeps. So our journey to a Bell program began last fall when Carl said, "We're getting a Bell program," and we all went, "Okay." We spoke to you a little bit last year about the planning initiatives, and our program was coordinated by a woman who unfortunately is no longer with our affiliate, Brooke Jensen. She's a TVI. She was living up in Watertown, the Watertown area, but she's actually moved to Colorado in Point. Yeah. In point of fact, she moved to Colorado about 3 days after our Bell program concluded. So she was trying to coordinate this thing from a 2-hour drive away every day and get her house packed up and her children were ready to go. Brooke is the mother of a blind son who was, of course, the first child enrolled in our Bell program. So Brooke and another TVI from the North Country, Joanne Zucker, who unfortunately can't be with us for family reasons today, they attended a national seminar targeting people coordinating Bell programs and basically gave them Bell boot camp, knowing what they had to fill out and how they had to get things organized. And they came back, brought it back to the state, recruited me to help them with the academic implementation piece of the program, and off we went. Coordinating a summer camp, it's not something, I mean, I went to summer camps as a kid. If you went to summer camp as a kid, say aye.
Aye.
You guys, we had no idea how much work went in to preparing a summer camp. We had to nail down a location, which meant finding a place where A, the kids could have reasonably easy access to us, B, the environment was child-friendly, and C, we weren't going to get in the way of anybody's summer school. We did find a place at Reynolds Elementary, which is in a teeny-tiny suburb on the outskirts of Syracuse. The decision had been made to hold the BELT program in Syracuse because it was centrally located within the state and because it was the closest sort of big center to where Brooke and Joanne were. So Reynolds Elementary was kind enough to give us a couple of classrooms worth of space. Then, after we had the space, which wasn't as easy as you would think, because Brooke had to go through all sorts of hoops, signing this paperwork, talking to this person, well, no, you have to talk to that person, in and out. It's not just a simple matter of calling up a principal and saying, hey, can we borrow your classrooms? There's a lot of paperwork and legwork that goes into it. So once that was established, we needed staff. Now, Brooke and Joanne and I had signed on from the outset as full-time staff, but we knew we were going to need more people than that. So Brooke used some of her contacts in the community to help us find two other TVIs who could work with us part-time. We had a young blind woman from the Syracuse area come and work with us as a part-time volunteer. And then we actually had a woman who was assisting with our youngest student, which I'll talk about in a minute. So there were six of us, all told. After we had a place, and after we had staff, we had to have money. All those of us who were working the program were donating our time, but children need to eat. Children need to be able to use materials, and the materials need to come from somewhere. So Brooke and all of you guys, actually, at the NFB of New York, helped us raise the money that we needed. And Brooke is an incredibly savvy shopper. And I think, Carl, what was the total for the program? Something like $3,000? We got the whole thing done. It was very, she was a very efficient financial manager.
There we are. Brooke spent about three-ish thousand dollars on the program. Then there were a few added costs that she couldn't do anything about, like transportation and gasoline and things like that. I think the cost of the program came to between $5,000 and $6,000, if I'm remembering right. I have to go back over lots and lots of figures. She between writing emails and recruiting people, I don't think the lady slept.
No, I don't think she did either. Because once all of that was established, as Carl said, there were then drivers. The central New York area is a very big area, and the kids are very much spread out. And to get them there, we needed to have them driven, because most of the parents worked or were otherwise unable to do that themselves. Brooke herself brought down a carload of kids every morning. It was about an hour and a half, two-hour drive. Danny Jardine, who is from this area, actually came and stayed with us and was, I'll get back to him later, but was instrumental actually in getting one of our other children from Elmira up. That was about an hour drive every day. We had another couple of kids from I never realized, having grown up in Syracuse, exactly how big it was, but picking up kids from one end of Syracuse and taking them to the other end literally took an hour. So lots of drivers, lots of coordinating, lots of legwork, and Brooke did all of that. And you notice, I'm already, 5 minutes in, and I haven't even talked about the kids or the curriculum yet. So all of this was the stuff that had to get set up before we could even talk about students and curriculum. So once we knew where the program was going to be, we knew how many students we could accommodate because we knew how many staff, we knew where we were going to get the food from, we knew how we were going to get the kids to the program, then we had to get the kids. Brooke reached out through the commission and her contacts in the community, and we actually ultimately ended up with 10 students, which Natalie informs me is a pretty significant number for our first BELT program. So once we had students' names on the list, we had to find out a little bit more about them. So we sent out parent surveys and we sent out TVI surveys, which is actually where we came across our first glitch, which is that the information we got from parents and TVIs was only sort of the tip of the iceberg. We had a couple of children with multiple disabilities, the extent and ramifications of which we didn't realize until we met them. And we also had we were given to understand through the information that we gathered that most of our students were reading on grade level in Braille. And in the case of most of those children, that was not the case. So in accumulating books and supplies, which were donated from Seedlings and from other places, we got materials that for many of our students were actually at a challenge level instead of at an instructional or an independent level. So it actually, live and learn for next time, right? It's something to take into the future. We'll know that we need to get more detailed data so that we can make sure that our students' needs are met more comprehensively from the outset. So we also had kids, our 10 kids ranged in age from 3.5 till 12. And if you've ever done anything with kids, you know that a 3.5-year-old and a 12-year-old do not function anywhere near at the same level. And all of these kids were going to be in one classroom and needed to have their needs met. So we, at this point, sat down and started to plan curriculum. Now, if you know anything about teachers, you know that we're all, I'm going to go with type A as a descriptor, control freaks, micromanagers, call us what you will. But if you get three of us, as Joanne and Brooke and I were on a conference call for any length of time, it kind of sounds like a session of Congress. You talk for 3 hours and nothing gets done. But ultimately we did actually, we many, many conference calls and some frustration and interpersonal managing later, we did come up with a curriculum that we hoped would meet the needs of all of our students. And all of this took place before the first day of school, of course, because we needed to have everything nailed down and ready. So what did a day look like in Bell? Because the kids were commuting in from all over the Central New York area, we didn't have a set start time. The kids sort of trickled in between 8:30. Those who came with the staff, of course, showed up when they did. And 9:30, those who were dropped off by their parents tended to come a little bit later. During this time, everybody who was in the room was participating in sort of warm-up activities. Now, this challenge that we had was, this was a summer camp. It's Braille education through literacy and learning, but it's also August, right? So these are kids who are giving up time out of their vacations to come to Braille camp. So we really wanted to make sure that it was fun. We didn't want to leave the impression that Braille is work, because while reading is work and is a necessary part of learning, this was, after all, the summer. So we did our warm-ups as games. We built Braille cells with golf balls and egg cartons. We did a go fish game with Braille magnets and foam fish. And we had some sort of outsized for our younger students. I'm sorry? Okay. For our younger students, we had some outsized Braille blocks that were easier for them to feel, and so they were doing matching games and activities with that. Following the warm-ups, once everybody got there, we had a typical morning meeting like you would have in any classroom. Which I think was actually good for the kids because it reinforced the idea that this is a learning experience. Yes, this is camp and yes, it's fun, but just like when you're at school, we're going to have this meeting time. And they were, I think it sort of helped to sort of serve as a pivotal point for the day. Then we would have about 2 hours of learning time. Which sounds a lot more boring than it actually was. Brooke actually constructed for each child a poster board sized human Braille twister board. And so we played Braille Twister, we learned how to use Braille writers. And if you remember being a kid and learning how to use a Braille writer, the best part about that is getting to bang on it. And we also used that time for some O&M training, so we taught the kids how to orient themselves north, south, east, west. That was sort of the bulk of the learning block of the day. We would do card games and matching activities and all kinds of stuff to keep the kids' hands busy, their brains busy, and to reinforce those Braille skills. Lunch every day was another sort of one of those highlights because, for two reasons. Number one, it was a highlight for me as a teacher because we had the kids making their own lunches. It was summer, and these were fairly young kids. Most of our kids were on the younger end of the spectrum between 4 and 7, so we didn't have them doing a lot of cooking, but we did have them making their own peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, making their own bologna sandwiches, pouring and carrying their own milk, all of that. And I loved, over the course of the 2 weeks, getting to see them improve their skills in that area. Also during lunch, we would have lunch with a blind leader. So successful blind adults from around the Central New York area, some of whom are in the room right now, would come in and talk to the kids about, not just about work and not just about Braille, but also how they live their lives. My dad actually talked about his experience as a wrestler in school and how important physical fitness and sports are to all of us, even though we're blind. We had another member talk about running his own business and how learning Braille had helped him. My mother, who's also in the room today, did a game with the kids called What Does the Guide Dog Do? Because there's a lot of mythology surrounding guide dogs and what they can and cannot do. And so since we'd been emphasizing cane travel, and I'll get back to that in a minute, we sort of used it as an opportunity to say, well, when you're older, if you want to get a dog, these are the things that they can do and these are the things that they can't. So it was another learning opportunity. Lucy came in and talked to us about technology and about the work that she does. So lunch was really one of the best times of the day. After lunch, we would do an hour of physical fitness. So we played goalball, we played beat ball, and we had the kids outside the elementary school on the playscape, which I'll talk about more in a minute because that was another one of my sort of favorite parts of the program. Following our rec time, we would do sort of a more specialized activity. So on a couple of occasions, we brought in art activities for the kids to do, because a lot of times in school, blind kids are limited in the way that they're able to interact with art activities that their peers are doing. So we brought in accessible materials and had the kids do art. One of the TVIs, who was a volunteer, brought in, she lives across the street from a bog, and brought in frogs and swamp grass and all kinds of things. I actually, as an adult, I am in my early 30s, and I had never seen a for real frog before. You know, you see them on TV, and you see them, the stuffed ones or the plastic ones in the museum shops, but I'd never seen an honest-to-God frog. So she's passing around this container with a frog, and I pick it up to look at it, and the thing twitches, and I jumped about 2 feet in the air. that was it. I'm thinking, okay, if this is fun for me in my 30s, this has got to be great if you're six. You know, oh, there's a frog in there. The same TVI actually also brought in an activity. Anybody in the room remember actually ever using an abacus? Yes. Okay. Well, she brought in abacuses, excuse me if that's not the correct plural, and I'm not sure what is the correct plural, so I'm just going to go with it. But anyway, she brought in some of the real ones, and we taught the kids how to count and do some simple math with abacuses, abaci. The kids also made their own with pipe cleaners and beads and sticks, and it was a really great time. So anyway, that after-lunch period was an opportunity for the kids to learn some additional kinds of skills. At the end of each day, the kids took a book out of our Braille library. And this is where the issue with the leveled reading came in. We had a lot of books that were not picture books or not twin vision books. They were just straight Braille books because we had been informed that the students were reading at a grade appropriate level. And for some of our kids, those would have been appropriate. But really, the popular books were the twin vision books, the ones with pictures, the ones with very simple Braille, because that was the reality of where our kids were. So again, a takeaway for next time. But anyway, the kids would take the books home, and then of course the next day they would check them back in. And at the end of the program, all of the books went home with kids. Each child received a giant box shipped home free matter with probably 15 or 20 books in it in Braille. So even if they were not able to read them at the time, they had them then in the house as a goal to work toward, which has definitely, there are some advantages to that as well. So by the end of the program, every kid could carry a cane and use it to find information. I was astonished on the first day of class by two things. The first being that one of the TVIs who was working with us, the first thing she said to the kids when they walked in the room was, okay, now put your cane in the corner. Yeah, exactly. That was my reaction. The person on the right of me goes, ah! And that was pretty much what happened in my head, too. So we sort of intervened a little bit and said, no, this is an environment where we want our kids to be proud of their canes. We want them to want to carry a cane. We, Joanne and I, are both blind. We're carrying canes. Our blind leaders who are coming in are carrying canes. You know, we're not going to, in this, what we need to teach our kids is how to use them correctly and the appropriate disposition of a cane in a classroom, i.e. not sticking out from under the table when someone's going to trip on it, or not stuffed so far under the table that you can't find it without help. Sorry?
He still hasn't learned.
Yeah, no, Harold needed to go to bell camp. So we one of the things on the first day, actually, we had the kids decorate their canes, and their name was in Braille on the cane, and you know, so that they sort of got to love their cane, and it wasn't this thing that they had to stash in the corner. So that was probably one of the biggest takeaway for the kids. A lot of the kids actually talk about Braille labels, couldn't read their own names tactily in Braille. The first day, a lot of the kids were bending over and looking at the Braille like their TV eyes were doing. And we had to teach them, no, touch the Braille, feel the Braille. You don't have to look at the Braille. What are you doing? So there was that actually also, because they had to sort out whose cane was whose, and they could take that opportunity to read the Braille and practice identifying their own names in Braille. By the end of the 2 weeks, every child could also load a Braille writer. A lot of our kids, when they came to us, literally couldn't put paper in a Braille writer independently. By the end of the 2 weeks, they could do that, and they could do appropriate fingering. So dot 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, okay, I just got the gong. 5 minutes. All right. They also could, as I said, make lunch independently, which sounds like such a simple thing, right? Make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. A lot of the kids didn't know how to hold a knife, how to hold the bread, how to hold the plate so it wasn't sliding, and how to hold your cane while you're making food with two hands. There was one particular incident. There's a young man. He's five, and he had one of those old school canes, you know, up to your belly button, real short, and he couldn't tuck it in the curve of his arm because it kept falling down, so that he couldn't have two hands free to make his sandwich. So we hooked him up with a taller cane, and hopefully he's using it now so that he can, you know, make his own food and carrying their own food from the lunch line to the table. A lot of the kids had not had that experience before. They were sort of waiting around that first day for a grown-up to do it. And it's like, no, let me show you how to do this. So in addition to the Braille, I guess you notice I'm sort of emphasizing so many of the other experiences, because the Braille, well, it's absolutely the purpose of the Bell program is not the biggest takeaway. There were so many others. The biggest breakthroughs that I saw, one young woman, she's 13, she had no Braille. By the end of the 2 weeks, she knew half the Braille alphabet and was saying to us, oh my gosh, my eyes don't hurt. I should be reading this all the time. How can I get my school district to teach me this? So that was one. We had another young girl, she's six, and she has some multiple disabilities, and by the end of the, Danny, if you're in the room, you know who I'm talking about. She at the outset of the program was so overwhelmed by the environment, the classroom environment, that she would literally just scream and throw herself on the floor and tantrums and hitting people. And by the end of the two-week program, she was able to articulate that she needed to go somewhere quiet. Not a Braille skill, but that's a huge life skill. If you're overwhelmed, you need to be able to express that to an adult. And that, again, huge. The third biggest breakthrough that I saw was we had a little girl, she was maybe five, and the first day when we took the kids out to explore the playscape, she didn't want to climb on the playscape, and she sort of stood next to it while the other children were exploring it with their canes. And then for those of you safety nuts in the room, after they'd explored them with their canes, they put the canes underneath so they weren't sliding down the slide with a cane. We're making friends, not shish kebab. So anyway, but after, you know, a day or two of sort of lurking on the periphery while her friends were playing, it was cute. And yesterday at POBC, I was able to act this out. I'm sort of chained to the podium here. She would walk up the steps and then walk back down and walk up the steps. And then walk back down. And she did this for a day or two. By the end of the program, that child was all over that playscape. There was no more timidity or fear or standing off to the side. She was engaging with her peers and engaging at the same level that they were. So, huge takeaways. I guess I've sort of gotten the gong over here. I would love to take questions if I could. Well, I got the 5 minutes before.
Is that Maria? Okay, go. He's working on getting you a mic.
We can hear from a mile away.
No.
It's much better if everybody can hear the question, too. Then we don't have to repeat it.
Could you speak a little bit to the parent piece in Bell?
Can you be more specific? What do you mean?
How do you engage parents? The child, for example, who asked you how do they go to their school district and get their school district to incorporate Braille in their education after that 2 weeks?
Okay. Prior to the start of the program, we had a conference call for parents to call in and discuss their children's individual needs. We did pre and post assessments with all the kids that were sent home, indicating to the parents in reality where your child actually is in Braille, not just what the school district said. And our contact information was made available, and links to the local commission were made available, and just a lot of sort of networking. And there was no formal sort of here's what you do, step A, step B, step C, but just opening those avenues of communication, and just keeping them open. Every student received a summative report with assessment data. I hope that answers your question. Is it? Go ahead.
One more after Chris. We'll see. Maybe two more. But at least one more after Chris.
Hey, Kate, it's not about the Bell program, but while you have the mic, I wanted to ask, where should the scholarship committee meet after session?
Oh, I don't know. Where, oh, okay. Carl, where should the scholarship committee meet after session? Room 723. And again, folks, that's a closed meeting.
Thank you.
Members of the scholarship committee only, please. Okay. What Bell-related question? I heard Chansey a minute ago. I think I thought I heard Chansey. I think Chansey had it.
Chansey?
Go ahead.
This dopey mic doesn't work right. There it is.
Sweet.
It is.
This is a question for Kate or possibly for Kevin. Has National thought about deploying any kind of sister program for adult learners?
That's definitely for Kevin, because I got a giant question mark floating over my head right now.
Would you have a question, Chance, for adult learning?
That is what that is.
I think it's something we probably ought to consider. I don't think we have considered it yet, Kevin, have we?
We don't have a specific program in mind at this point.
But I think it's something we probably ought to consider now that you've raised it. I think you actually, a couple of years ago, the riding a bicycle, like Rick Abono drove the car, and we're actually thinking about that now. So I think we ought to think about a Bell program for adults, and I think maybe we'll try to raise it in the fall.
And I know that we're short on time, but I have to say,
you say the library might what? To host it? Okay, good. We've got to start there. Good. Okay.
We're a little short on time, but I will just quickly say,
we're going to have to shorten them.
Yep, really quickly, just going to say, I think the older children actually, this sort of dovetails with what you're asking with regard to adults, I think the older children were the most invested in the learning process. They understood they were at a deficit in their classrooms and knew that this was an avenue. By the end of the program, they all knew that this was an avenue to help them get on level and to be able to be competitive and successful. So, thank you all. I hope that was informative at least.
One second. Okay, good. We've got
to
start there.
I have agreed to be a lead teacher. And we're a little short on time, but I will just quickly say, I think the older children actually, this is sort of dovetailing with what you're asking, but I think the older children were the most invested in the learning process. They understood they were
working.
What we need
I will schedule and send out an email as a good evening to have a conference call for the first planning. A couple of you I would like to send to Baltimore to do the training at National on what's necessary to pull this off correctly. I'd want to talk to Kate about it and get the information that I need. She can't be the lead person setting up. I need somebody who will be able to dedicate the time to finding a venue. For instance, Chancey's found a venue if we want to do an adult program. But we need to find a place for a venue for a children's program. We need to line up drivers if necessary. We need to line up how we're going to get food. We need to line up a curriculum, blah, blah, blah. Kate can help with curriculum and email it and do the conference calls and the like. But her work schedule prohibits her from doing the things that need to be done. So in about a week or so, what's the date on Monday? Monday is the 9th, 10th?
Monday is the
10th. Okay. I'm thinking tentatively I'd like to do a conference call on the 17th. On the 17th of this month, but I will send out an email sometime next week, an interest finder, and if you're interested, then call in on the conference call, and we'll see what kind of troops we have who might be able to participate in some, one of these things.
Really, and I swear this is the last thing, but we need a program upstate, guys. New York City, I know, you know, Maria, Chansey, there's lots of people, you know, able and willing to help, you know, transportation's easier downstate, et cetera. These children that we work with last summer, many of them had never seen a blind person before. These kids need Braille. They need to be around blind people, and they need a Bell program. We're really looking for people upstate.
Somebody's competing with the sound.
No, it's us. It's like we're hearing you.
Oh. We'll look into this and go forward with this. I know we will have a program upstate. We have a few dollars left over. We're raising money today, and we have a few dollars left over from last year's program. We have at least $1,000 to start towards the program. If we're going to do them both, we're going to do two programs. We'll probably need between $10,000 and $15,000 to do that. I'd like to ask at some point. I'll ask it later during his remarks. For the commission. Anyway, Kate, thank you for everything you did last summer, you and your colleagues. Thank you for demonstrating that it's possible. Ring your bells, folks. Take these bells home with you. They're yours. They're yours to celebrate our Bell program.